Wade in the water, children. Wade in the water.
My God's gonna trouble the water.
Come on and wade in the water. You gotta wade.
Steiner, that is Wade in the Water, Sweet Honey and the Rock. And on this day in history, October the 2nd, in 1942, the founder of Sweet Honey and the Rock, Bernice Johnson Reagan, was born in Albany, Georgia in 1942. Historian, musicologist, radical revolutionary leader, founded Sweet Honey and the Rock, and also the Mississippi Freedom Singers, which became the SNCC Singers during the Civil Rights Movement. And we'll hear more from her. And that legacy during the course of the next couple hours, celebrating her birthday. On this day was also in 1800, Nat Turner was born, who led the slave rebellion in the 1830s here in the United States of America. In 1869, Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, was born in the year 1869, who led the nonviolent revolution that threw the British out of India. With a shutdown of our government, maybe we should be thinking about what our own movement might do in this country. This is the day in 1879, Wallace Stevens, the American poet, was born. And one of the greatest comedians in American history, Groucho Marx, was born in 1890. If we can get a piece of his voice today, we'll throw that in the air as well. In 1895, Ruth Cheney Streeter was born. She was the first director of the United States Marine Corps Women's Reserve, the first real woman jarhead. And she was the first to attain a rank of major in the U.S. Marine Corps when she was commissioned that in 1943. This is the day in 1898 that Otis J. Renee was born. He and his brother Leon created Exclusive and Excelsior Records in the 1930s. He was one of the great early songwriters in America who wrote incredible hits for Nat King Cole, Herb Jeffries, Johnny Otis, many stars throughout the 1960s. Was born on this day from the 30s to the 60s. Was born on this day in 1898. And we'll try to get some of his tunes on as well. Mel Torme sang a lot of his songs as well. This is the day that Robert J. Lawrence was born in 1935. He was an astronaut and a pilot, the first African-American selected for space travel. He was killed in December 1967 in a training accident. Many people create this conspiracy theory around it, but it was interesting that in 1999, the National Memorial Foundation erected in honor of those astronauts who gave their lives. His name was not on it. Until much later, when pushed by James Oberg, it was included in 1997. Very controversial, but was the first African-American to become an astronaut in this country. As I said earlier, on this day, Bernice Johnson Reagan was born. And happy birthday to our friend and colleague, Melissa Harris Perry. This is her birthday as well. This is the day in 1789 that George Washington sent the proposed constitutional amendments becoming the Bill of Rights for ratification. This is the day in 1925 that the first working television by John Logie Baird was brought to our attention, began to change the nature of our communications in this country. This was the day in 1935 that Ethiopians began their fight against the Italian fascist invasion of their country. Also on this day in 1937, the dictator of Dominican Republic, Rafael Trujillo, executed over 20,000 Haitians living in Haiti. This is the day in 1944, the Germans crushed the Warsaw Uprising. In 1950, Peanuts by Charles Schulz was first published. Great cartoon. This is a day of cartoon history as well. Jumpstart in 1969, premiered in 40 newspapers around the country, created by Rob Armstrong, just 26 years old, the youngest African-American to ever have a syndicated comic strip. He followed the footsteps of Maury Turner, the creator of Weepace, the first African-American syndicated comic strip in this country. This is the day in 1967. Thurgood Marshall was sworn in as the first African-American justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And in 1968 on this day, hundreds and hundreds of students in Mexico were mowed down by the police in their standing up to the government. In 1971, this is a day when miners and longshoremen closed the docks and mines in the United States of America in 1971. 140,000 men and women on strike on this day. And this is the day in 1986 that Ronald Reagan's veto of legislation sanctioning South Africa was overturned. by Congress in this day. And in 1989, the Supreme Court made a decision that prohibited attorneys in civil cases from dismissing jurors because of their race. Only in 1989 did that occur. And this is the day in 2002, the Beltway sniper attacks began, that extended over 3 weeks, that we all remember who were around at that point. And this was the day in 2002 that President Barack Obama gave that historic speech in downtown Chicago opposing the war in Iraq. This is also the very sad day in 2006 when five schoolgirls were murdered by Charles Carl Roberts at the Amish school in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, before Roberts himself committed suicide. This day, we now welcome once again to our program John Nichols, the Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, contributing writer for The Progressive and In These Times, associate editor of The Capital Times, the daily newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin, co-author of Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. John, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It is great to be with you, Mark. And I got to tell you, if every newscast in America did it this day as history like you just did, it would be a far better country.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, John. It means a lot to us to do that in the beginning. Thank you.
I'm very serious. I mean, just to be reminded that this is the day Obama gave his speech. And, you know, I mean, I'll probably use that in a couple of talks today. So
oh, good.
You've already helped me.
I'm glad I can help, John. That's good. So
there you go.
Let's talk a bit about your analysis of the as you've been writing about in your blog, the kind of power and strength of the Tea Party, where they come from, and what this shutdown really means, and what is kind of some of the focal points of this battle.
Well, I think that there's a lot going on here, and we can take it apart in a whole bunch of ways. But to my mind, the most important thing is always to step back from, you know, the flash news of the moment and look at the structural realities that create the circumstance we're in. And the structural reality that creates the circumstance we're in right now with a shutdown of the government and a real complexity in trying to figure out how we get out of it is gerrymandering, how we draw congressional districts. And that's almost not very little talked about in the discussion. And yet it's absolutely the critical thing to understand. And everybody knows what gerrymandering is. It's when one party gets control of a state and they very carefully draw the districts to make sure that they win the most seats. The way you do this is by drawing the lines for districts in a way that moves the most numbers of people in your party into that district. So the person who holds a seat, a congressional seat, can never lose, right? That if it's a Republican district, a Republican will never lose. If it's a Democratic district, Dem will never lose. But what happened after the 2010 election is that across this country, Republicans swept in. They did very, very well in 2010, much better at the state level than the federal level, actually, although they did pretty well at the federal level. In the states, they drew incredibly Republican districts, so overwhelmingly Republican that there was simply no question that the only real contest is the primary, not the general election. And this is the critical thing to understand. In the Republican caucus today, there are only maybe 30 to 40 hardcore Tea Party conservatives. It's actually a small minority of the Republican caucus. And yet, they are able to destabilize the caucus and ultimately the government of the United States to prevent a compromise on the continuing resolution to force this crisis because they are able to say to much more reasonable, much more moderate Republicans, if you don't go with us, this Tea Party movement will, and its financial allies, it's very well funded, will defeat you in Republican primaries in 2014. And that threat is the definitional reality of our Congress today. And I'll give you one other fact, Mark. In 1995, when we had a shutdown, we thought a very, very intractable situation, very, very difficult situation. In 1995, 79 of the Republicans in that Congress represented districts that had voted for Bill Clinton. Effectively, that meant that they were representatives of relative swing districts, districts that, you know, had a little bit of back and forth in their politics.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's only 17. So we have, through gerrymandering, created a Republican caucus in the House that doesn't care about general elections, doesn't care about the consequences with the mass electorate, even if this is a very unpopular shutdown, the only thing they care about is their primaries. And so even reasonable Republicans don't step up and say object to this because they're afraid they might get beat and lose their seat in a primary.
So what does that say to you, though, in terms of their power, even though it doesn't represent the majority of Americans, even though it kind of was fueled in many ways, as you and others have written about, by a lot of very powerful right-wing conservative money that was intent on changing the landscape of America politically. So what does that portend? If they have no fear, then what does that portend for the future, both of the shutdown and for the electoral process in the future?
Well, it's two things. Both very, very good questions, Mark. What it portends for the future of the shutdown is that we may actually get a short-term resolution, a clean, continuing resolution that will allow the government to briefly reopen. But for so long as this is the case, we are in a constant crisis model. This country will not talk about poverty. It will not talk about global warming. It will not talk about fundamental education reforms or even realistic and fair tax reforms. None of the things that Americans actually would like to talk about are going to be a part of the discourse. What will be the discourse for the foreseeable future, no matter what happens with this shutdown, going into the debt ceiling debate, and again, another continuing resolution debate, crisis after crisis after crisis, and we will keep returning to this place because that small minority of Republicans will always be able to stir up a crisis because they're able to take one house of our Congress and make even the reasonable people there afraid to act. And what this, you know, foretells for our electoral politics is an ongoing crisis politics defined not by ideas and values in any kind of realistic way, but by the ability of a minority to destabilize the whole of the government and the fact that they get their power from that. What we, the people, have to do, and that's all of us, is to think much more about gerrymandering. And we can't do it simply by saying, oh, well, let's draw Democratic districts or let's draw, you know, let's play some game here, a partisan game that takes it one way or the other. You know, that hasn't worked. We're 200 years into this American experiment. We've had this gerrymandering problem for a long time. It's getting much worse. What we have to do is look to groups like the Brennan Center, Fair Vote, which is a wonderful group in the D.C. area, and a lot of other structuralists who are seeking legally and even constitutionally, certainly legislatively, to respond to the crisis of gerrymandering. I guarantee you, Mark, we all talk about money in politics, and it's a big, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about voter suppression, it's a big, big deal. Nothing defines the character of our politics more than gerrymandering of congressional districts. And we're actually seeing right now the reality of that. We've got to get serious. We have to talk about it. I'm delighted that you're picking this up today. I'm delighted that Tom Friedman picked this up. We wrote about it a couple days ago. I'm delighted now Tom Friedman's picked it up in the New York Times. I think other people are going to start talking about this. And I cannot emphasize to you, this is the central issue. As long as we have the structure we have, it allows a minority, a tiny minority, to frankly destabilize the whole of the federal government by getting control of one of the major parties, not through electoral victories, but through the threat of electoral punishment.
Well, next week when we sometime in the next week, I think we'll devote an entire hour to the question of how we district in this country, how we vote in this country, and we need to create that conversation among our listeners in this Mid-Atlantic region. So it affects Pennsylvania, it affects Maryland, it affects Delaware, it affects Virginia, it affects all of us around here. So, Don Nichols, I appreciate all the writing you do and the message you're giving to the rest of America. Thank you so much once again for joining us.
You're the best, Mark. We appreciate you at no end and continue to speak about the lovely event we had in Baltimore with you and all the good people in Baltimore and thereabouts.
It was great. You and Bob McChesney, that lives on our website at standishow.org. If you missed it, go listen to it.
We love it. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Take care.
So we're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, we are going to come back and talk about an issue that affects this region deeply, transportation, our frustration around it. What could the future really be? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Bum, 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 bum
often to deeds. Listen more often to things than to deeds. 'Tis the ancestor's bird. When the fire's voice is heard, 'tis the ancestor's bird. In the voice of the water.